Hello and welcome to the Retirable Podcast. My name is Mike Wallace.
My name is John Sauger.
So, John, just last week we went to a conference in Las Vegas in our industry. First of all, it was a fantastic conference. We learned a lot. Actually, our boss, Richard Javid James, got inducted into the Hall of Fame, which was an award in our industry from this company that we do business with. So that was kind of exciting.
We got to go to the Sphere. We got to see that for the first time.
Oh, yeah,
there's a lot of lights there, a lot of speakers, et cetera. It's a kind of cool environment.
So why don't you talk about the Sphere a little bit? I think that was pretty cool, huh?
We did. We got to see a show there. Apparently, there's concerts and stuff that people will do there. So it was a really neat experience. We got to get some nice weather in Vegas and have some nice meals, but. A lot of it is hearing different speakers, right? You hear some of the different speakers and what they do in their practice. And like a headline speaker might be how they do things in their or in whatever their field of choice is. So it was a really good time. And it was good refresher to always, you know, make sure you're doing or we're doing what our plans are and hearing new things and seeing if we can add those in or being proud of what we do and you know, in how we fit into that spectrum.
Yeah, one of the highlights was John Maxwell, which is a world-renowned author, him speaking, and, you know, he's 76,
I think at the time.
But he's been doing this for years and years and years, and he's just such a polished speaker, and he can just communicate so well, but his messages were fantastic as well. So I did enjoy that.
It was. And then, of course, when you're in Vegas, you always get time to sneak away for a little bit. And we chose to sneak away for a round of golf. And Mike happened to have an interesting experience while we were golfing.
Yeah, I had a really incredible experience. We actually were golfing. We got able to sneak away in golf. And I happened to hit the perfect golf shot and got a hole in one. So it was fantastic. So we were at Bally High in Vegas, and it was a 150-yard shot, and it was straight on the pin, hit one or two bounces, and then went right into the cup.
I've never seen it before. It was such a really cool experience, and of course, you, rightfully so, went nuts and were hugging everybody. It was very, very cool to see.
Well, it was cool because my partner here, John, was actually golfing with me, so it's kind of fun that we had a group of my coworkers there to witness that as well. So it just is an experience that I'll never forget. But it was just so exciting. And anybody that's golfing and, you know, people do that their entire lifetime and that'll never happen. And so it is an opportunity of a lifetime. And I'm still just like giddy about it. And even Richard, our boss, said to me, he says, you know what, you're never going to be able to golf a par three now again without thinking that you had a hole in one, you know? And so it's like every time.
It's a fun memory to have with you.
You know, so every time you're golfing, you'll have that memory or you'll believe that maybe you can do it again too.
Absolutely.
You know, so, okay, let's talk about more golf, John.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, we'll make it a golf episode, right?
Okay, well, you know, we probably could do a golf episode one time, right?
Absolutely.
You know, it is funny you say that and we'll get onto our subject, but, you know, when we talk about retirement planning, you know, one of the things we oftentimes have is goals, right? And some of the times one of the goals is I want to go join a golf club.
Absolutely.
You know? And so that's part of that planning and basically lifestyle in retirement as well. So it's just kind of...
We had a conversation with someone a few years ago and his focus was to stay physically healthy enough to golf his age for as long as he wanted to. And I said, well, that number is going to get higher, right, as you get older. And he said, of course, but he was an excellent golfer. And he said, yeah, I'm 72. I think he was 72, 73 at the time. And that was what he generally golfed. He was a scratch golfer or a fantastic golfer. That was his goal. And I mean, so yeah, golfing is one of those things that a lot of people will do in retirement. That's what some of the money is for, right?
I will never golf my age. So,
well, you never know. You might, I mean,
if
you
I could, make it to 100, could, yeah, I'll be golfing 130 at that point. Yes, exactly. So, all right. So today we're going to talk about something kind of unique. And it's kind of more, very familiar with what we do as advisors. But it's sometimes hard to understand as a client. but it's very, very popular nowadays given our environment. But it's what they call structured products, and there's different variations of that. But John, why don't we just introduce them to structured products and give us like a little bit of a definition?
So there's a lot of ways we can fit this in, and we're going to try and have a broad definition. This program is not designed to give you investment advice or financial advice. It's designed to increase your intelligence on it and let you know where to go to find stuff specific to yourself. So if we're going to be generic on this, the idea would be a structured program. We would loosely define a structured product, structured program. We would loosely define as something maybe with guardrails. And if you can picture my hands, I'm making an upper and a lower guardrail. So there's a dollar amount you might have, and an upper guardrail and a lower guardrail might be a structure. The lower guardrail means if things go bad, you're protected up to a certain amount. A perfect example is a CD at the bank. If the market goes down, you don't lose any money because you're not in the market. You have a lower guardrail. You can't lose any money, right? That's the design behind most CDs. You also have an upper guardrail where if the market goes up 20%, the CD told you they were paying 4.5. So you're making 4.5. So you choose those guardrails. Hey, I don't want to lose. I'm making 4.5. I'm willing to take that guardrail. Now, that's a basic explanation, but the world of investments with technology, with, you know, quantitative and algorithmic investing, we've been able to create so many different variations off of that. And so we'll use some examples today. But guardrails is the key thing you want to think of as we start talking about this and how those guardrails fit with your particular planning.
And so some of those guardrails basically mean no loss of principal, right?
Sure.
And then there's some guardrails that say maybe we'll share in some of those losses with you, or they'll absorb the first amount of certain losses as well. Yep. So to kind of use John's example there, you know, just in a traditional CD, but they have what they call market-linked CDs, which would be considered a structured product. And what that would do is your interest rate would be based on the performance of an index. And let's just say commonly they'll use, let's say, the S&P 500.
Very common, okay? Yep.
And then what they'll say is, okay, you know, we'll give you an 18-month CD, for example. You can't lose a dime. It's based on the market. But if the market were to go up, you know, the most you could make is, let's say, 12% over that 18 months. So if the market were to go up, you know, 7%, you'd get the 7%. If the market went up 18%, though, you only got the 12%, they'll participate in some of those gains in that case scenario.
So, and I think after every example we need to give, it's just a reminder that we're using examples, right? These aren't something where you can go, oh, I want that exact one, right? And most of these are situations where you could customize them for yourself, or there is something that you would call like off the shelf. And you could say, I want to buy into that version. And so it fits almost every category. If you say a type of an investment, you said a CD, the word annuity, you could have this in an annuity platform. You could have it in a bond platform. You can have it in an exchange traded fund or sitting literally in almost any holding. So a structured program or product can be loosely defined, but it could fit in almost any of these categories. We can talk a little bit more about examples on this, and we will. You can use structured programs if you're risk averse and you want growth, mm-hmm. right? You could also use structured programs if you are not risk averse, if you're an aggressive, but you need a consistent return for part of your planning, right? So there's different ways it can also fit into a portfolio. Is that fair to say?
It's definitely very, very unique in how it can be used as well. It's a tool, right?
Sure.
Just like most of the investments we talk about is a tool in your toolbox. And so but oftentimes, and why it has become so popular is because the returns on some of these things have been significant, but also when we have a down marketplace, oftentimes haven't lost as much either,
sure.
right? So depending on what you're using. And what's really cool about it, and John used an example about off the shelf or, there's ones that are customized, you know, so a lot of times, they have companies out there that will, any index you want, you know, any type, you can use, like you said, ETFs. A lot of times it's blended
sure.
as well. And then there's also products that allow you to choose from many different. So, you have X number of dollars and you could actually say, I want some money in the S&P 500, some in the international index, some in the NASDAQ, some in the Russell 2000. And they may even have different buffers inside of it as well.
Sure.
You know, so John, let's talk a little bit about the buffer. I just said use the word buffer.
You did.
So why don't you explain what a buffer means?
So actually, there's a couple things. Let's build on this. So when you're using a term buffer, what you're using is some sort of downside protection. And what I mean by downside is if you're tracking an index and that index goes down, you want some sort of protection. So in the industry, or what you, the listener, might hear, you might hear different versions of this. You might hear a hard protection or soft protection, and you might hear the term buffer, or you might hear the term barrier. And they're all very similar, but there are some differences. So a barrier protection would say, and that would be what we call protection up to a point. So let's say your barrier is negative 30%. If the market you're tracking, let's say it's the S&P 500, if it goes down 29% at the end of your duration, and your duration might be a year, might be 18 months, might be, it's whatever. So know the terms, whatever the duration is you're using. Let's just say, for argument's sake, it's a year. And at the end of your year, the market is down 28%. Your barrier was 30. You don't lose a penny. If you break through the barrier and the market's down 32%, you lose the full 32%. So your barrier is hard protection. You break through it, it's gone. Now, why you might do something like that is you might take a really big barrier, and that might still give you a really big potential for upside growth. You're taking a bit of a risk. Hey, I don't think the market's going to go down 30. I'm willing to put my money where my mouth is. Give me a big return just in case. Because that way, if I'm wrong and it goes down 19, I still didn't lose anything, right? Yep. So there's an idea with a barrier. Now, a buffer that you mentioned is a little different. A buffer is you're protected up to a certain point, but you'd lose beyond that. So let's use that 30% example. The market you're tracking is down 28%. You don't lose anything. The market's down 32. You were protected up to 30. The financial company backing you ate up the first 30. So the market's down 32. You would only lose 2. Now, the trade-off between buffer and barrier, or hard and soft protection, you'd feel a lot more protection there in that buffer category, right? Yep. Hey, the market's down 30. I only lost 2. I didn't want to lose anything, but that's still I'm much better off. The trade-off is on the upside, right? Yep. You're going to get a little less upside for that style of protection. But again, using a structured program and where it fits what you're trying to do for the world of investing. If you're saying, hey, I just want this as a hedge and I'm really going for growth and this is long-term money, maybe you look one version versus the other, right? So everybody's situation is going to be different.
Let's just kind of, you know, summarize that a little bit. You know, a barrier, if it goes through, so let's just use a 30%, let's just use a 10% barrier. If the market was down by 8%, you don't lose a dime. If the market goes down by 12% with a barrier, you would lose the full 12%.
Yep.
But in a buffer, in that same example, if the market went down, if you have a 10% buffer and the market went down 8%, you still don't lose a dime. If the market went down 12%, you only lose 2%.
Perfect. Okay? Yep.
So that's the buffer and the barrier. And there's many other different combinations of this stuff that we may or may not get to today. But let's now talk about the upside, though. You know, so now that we talked about the buffers and the barriers, but what does that allow them to do on the upside then, John?
Well, the situation there is it really allows a person, let's use myself as an example, I can be invested in whatever the fashion it is, an ETF, a bond, an annuity, whatever. I can be invested for a portion of time knowing that, hey, I'm leaning one way. I think the market might go up. And therefore, but in case I'm wrong, I have some protection. So I can still get a good index-based return. It's generally going to be an index, an S&P 500, Russell 2000, NASDAQ, what have you. But it allows me to participate in gains with some sleep at night feeling, right?
Yeah. Yep.
On the other side, if I'm one of those people that's, hey, you know, I had some changes in my life. Maybe it's not exactly where I need to be on my dollar amount, but I'm out of time. I need to make money. I really don't want to lose. I'm really, really risk averse, but I still want to try and get some of that gain. Maybe this is a way to hedge, right? So it can fit different categories for different personalities or different situations. Now, again, it's not a perfect situation. Every investment is unique. Every person is unique. I want to, you know, make sure we're explaining and identifying that. This is not a recommendation to say this is exactly how you have to do it. But it does fit for a lot of situations when we're looking and saying, hey, I just don't have the stomach to just invest in a holding and ignore it if it goes down, Or maybe, hey, I still think things are going to go up, but I don't have the, you know, I don't have the capital to take a big loss or something like that. So it fits for some of those categories.
A lot of investments aren't great for all of your money, right?
Sure.
But there's a lot of investments that are good for a portion of your assets. And so you talked a lot about those, just the people that are risk or risk averse, right? And so oftentimes this is a perfect investment based on their risk tolerance, right? You know, they may need some growth in their portfolio. They may need some inflation proof of their portfolio because, you know, they are younger and they want to make sure that you know, later on down in life that they're able to still have their same lifestyle. And so, but yet they don't want to be full on risk in the marketplace, right? Because it's a little too uncomfortable for them. So that might be a good choice for a portion of their assets in that case scenario.
Well, and I think what I would like to highlight there, just kind of bringing in other things that we've talked about, right? If you're listening to this, this is probably not your first listen. You've probably listened to other parts of what we talked about. And so again, where you say the word, it's a perfect investment. Of course, we know there's no perfect investment for everybody. It's what's,
Good point.
What's unique for a particular person. But when we're in that situation, if we're doing, I'll use myself as an example. If I am building my portfolio with a bucket plan mentality, the now, soon, and later buckets, there's a time where, hey, the economy and the way I feel in my current situation may put me in one risk category. Like you said, I don't want it all in one bucket. I don't want it all in one category. This might be a perfect hedge. And I can build that to fit and use myself. I might think, hey, I really think the market's going to go great guns. And my wife might say, hey, I think the market's going to tank. Well, this might be a nice hedge for us both to say, hey, we can still keep this invested in whatever bucket we choose. Let's say it's our later bucket, but here's the hedge we have. So, and we can do that, of course, many, many different ways, but that structure allows us both to know we're going to be, or very high percentage chance we're going to be within those guardrails, right?
Well, and more importantly, you know, because it has a time limit. So all of these structured products have a time
or a duration
component, duration. I'm sorry, that's better word, right? So there's a duration. So some of them could be 5 or 6 years, and some of them could be, you know, probably the shortest ones we see mostly is going to be a year, right? So, but let's say 1 to 3 years is probably, you know, a good average of what we see. But what that also can do is maybe people are just feeling uncomfortable for a short period of time, and so they don't want to go full on risk in the marketplace, and so they do it for a year or two, and then they can make other decisions.
Absolutely.
It's a good place in that case scenario to make a temporary decision. Okay.
Well, in the magic that sometimes will come from that is after that year, what your structure did, you were within guardrails that allowed you to plan. And what I mean by that is if I know I'm going to be within these guardrails, let's say the lower guardrail is 10%, but the market is down 12, and I used a buffered product. Yes, I lost 2, but the market is down 12. That might be a good time to bring in some of the other planning, the advanced planning we've talked about in other episodes. That might be a good time for a Roth conversion if it's a retirement account, right? Hey, I'm down 2, the market's down 12. Boy, that gives me the opportunity to buy into the market at a low point and ride it back up tax-free, right? So that consistency of the return in a portion of my portfolio was really, really huge, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. And so, you know, not only because it can help absorb the losses, but there's still potential to make money when the market goes
Absolutely.
Up. So let's talk about, we talked about the guardrails and the buffers and the barriers on the downside. But what are some of the guardrails or the barriers or buffers, let's just say, because they're not really called that, but we're going to talk about it in a minute. They're called more like what they call a cap on the upside. But why don't you tell us a little bit about what the earning potential is on the upside?
It's going to be different for different people. And what I mean by that is, are we buying something off the shelf or are we having something custom? But furthermore, how do you hold it? Meaning, are you in after-tax money? Because that's a different taxable footprint than in pre-tax money a little bit. So after-tax money, what we call non-qualified money in the industry, but meaning you've paid taxes on it. If you use a structured program, the tax footprint is different short of a year versus a year and a day or longer. So there's a little bit of a nuance there. Let's put that to the side for a second and say this is what we call qualified money or retirement account money, okay? You can really sell it at any time in most of these situations. You have an upside cap or a limit. They might say you can make the first 10% of the market if it's up. The benefit is if it's it, and that's in the duration. So at the end of the year, the market's up 9, you had a limit of 10, you make 9%, right? Minus any fees, depending on how the program was. Some might have different fees. You'd have to look at that. But you might look at it and say, hey, I have an upper limit of 10, but I think the market's going to do higher than that. Well, if 6 months in, your account is up 10% and that's all you can make, you don't have to sit there the next 6 months. You can sell it or trade it and go higher. So it's a cap, and you're just tracking a basic market. So that is one basic return, right? So, but there are other derivatives of that. So Mike, you could kind of explain maybe a little bit, like, that's just growth potential. Hey, I'm just looking for what's called accumulation.
Yeah.
But maybe there are other versions where you're looking for, hey, I want to hedge. I think the market's going to go down, but I still need a rate of return. We can actually set that up too, can't we?
Yeah. It's getting kind of deep, you know, with some of these explanations. But that's what's cool about this is that the guardrails. I like the verbiage of that, because you can set your guardrails. So what it comes down to is your return is going to kind of be based on the safety of the, yep, you know, the of potential what you can make is based on a lot of that, on what the, you know, the potential for loss, right? And so the bigger potential for loss, the bigger potential for return, right? And the bigger, the less risk that you're taking, oftentimes the less potential for return in those guardrails. But they have guardrails right now that basically you can sometimes even bet against the marketplace, yep, you know? And yep, so some of those where, you know, there's some, again, we're getting a little too complicated here, but we'll call it a dual direction, where what they'll say is if the market were to go down 15% or up 15%, so if the market were to go in between those two, so if it's minus 7 or minus 14 or plus 3, then you get just a flat rate. Let's just say 7.5% or 7%, okay? So what's cool about that is, you know, they do the statistics and they show on an annual basis on X number of years, you know, what's the percentage chance that it's going to go up or down 15%? And it's pretty high, you know, when we look at that. And so you're looking at a rate of return of 7.5% just like automatically, unless it goes outside those guardrails. In that case scenario, if the market were to go down, you know, 16 or 17%, right, then you would just lose the 2%. You don't make anything, right?
Like you said, it's an in-depth conversation, because Mike and I have dealt with this so many different times. In our minds, doing flashbulb memories, like we talked about with golf, we're using examples and we're trying to explain verbally off of examples that we're both visually picturing, right? So this is something that is, if it's something that's interesting to you, obviously you talk to a professional about this, and there are illustrations and examples and understandings of this. And it is very, very commonly used. I've heard recently that structured programs make up almost 30% of wealth management. Now, that's a really loose generic term, right? I'm not quoting anything there, but so wealth management would be what we do, talking about all the different parts of wealth, like holistically and all the things we talk about. So I guess that's a loose definition there. And that 30%, that I don't know where that number is in reference to, so I don't think that's an exact number, right? But it's a big percentage of what people do now when it comes to wealth management.
Well, and we've seen it just in our evolve since we've been doing this for decades ourselves. Just in the last 5 or 10 years, it's exploded, right?
And
so many different versions of it. And I think John had a good point earlier, so I want to kind of reiterate that. Oftentimes, this is a hard thing to explain, you know, verbally, right? We oftentimes have illustrations, or you know, we'll even, you know, draw some examples to understand how these things work. But I guess overall, and we'll just kind of summarize is the fact that there's many, many different investments using many different types of investments. It could be anything from gold to, you know, CDs, right? And everything in between.
Yep.
ETFs, different indexes, you know, different international indexes for that matter too. And then you can set the guardrails. And some of them are just, like you said, off the shelf. But if something, you know, intrigues individuals, we have had individuals that we've been able to customize some of that stuff as well. So it's just basically a way to find an investment that does have some protection, but also has some growth potential as well.
And where it would fit for most people is, we're not sitting here telling you should do every penny into something like this. This is something that fits in More than likely one of your buckets, right? Depending on your risk tolerance, the capital you have, the style of investing you have, your et cetera. It's a tool that can be used in a soon bucket for, hey, I need some protection and I need some sleep at night money. It can be used in the later bucket of you saying, hey, I'm very risk averse, but I'd like to push it forward. I want a little hedge on my money, but I'd still like to get some gains. So you can use it in different fashions, right? And that comes back to having a conversation with your wealth manager, your investment advisor, and how it would specifically fit for you. But the idea of this conversation today is to whet the appetite and say, this is a world that's out there that is used a lot, and a growing number of people are using it, and we want to make sure people are aware of it and where to get resources on it.
And in different wrappers too, John, whether it's, you know, using it for tax advantage situations, you know, using it in different types of things. You know, you're right. It is very becoming really, really consistent, and we're seeing a lot in the investment world through the financial advisor eyes.
Yeah.
But it's just starting to, like, you just get out to the public, you know, to the retail investor is just starting to find out a little bit more about this. So we just wanted to make sure if you're hearing that, you know, structured note, structured product, structured program, anything that's similar to that, that you have at least a basic understanding of what that means.
And even what questions to ask. You know, yeah. I think it's a great point, Mike. We were at a workshop convention last week, and I was actually talking with someone in the industry, and he said, oh, this is the best idea ever. I don't know why anybody wouldn't use it. And I said, well, there's a world of investments. There's nothing perfect for everybody. And he proceeded to explain this concept in the way he talks about it with people. And he was very, very emotionally excited about it. He was very energetic. And what he explained was excellent. It really, you know, made me feel comfortable saying, okay, someone else is using this term. But what was interesting about it, though, was some of the ways he explained it, exactly some of the same things we said, the way he explained it. But what he said was he thought it took multiple visits, multiple conversations for someone to have a good understanding if they're not in the industry with it, because it is new, it is unique. Even this conversation, you might have to replay it again and go, wait a minute, what questions do I even ask about this, right? I just wanted to bring that up. I think it's a good conversation, but again, it's part of a conversation. You need to have more information on it.
Yeah, because it can get into the weeds if you're not that into the weeds kind of person.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
And so you just gotta try to keep it simple in that case scenario.
Yeah, I glossed over when you were talking about stuff.
Of course.
Yeah.
I do that all the time when you talk, John. So it works.
So should we jump into our holistic happenings?
Absolutely.
All right. So with holistic happenings, if you've obviously been listening to this, you know, at the end of every episode, we will generally just off the cuff have a conversation with each other about something we might see, that we might have experienced, that we might have gone through, that deals with the holistic part of things. Remember the all encompassing part of finances, whether it's the estate planning and how it connects with insurance, or the taxes and how they connect with finances, or that whole combination of stuff. So, Mike, give us what have you had experience on holistic happenings?
Well, it was kind of interesting when I was thinking about today about you know, some of the stuff that we see in the industry, but also stuff that's going on in our personal lives as well. You know, I'm 55 years old, and I got my first hole in one last week. I'm just kidding with you about
that. Is that new?
Is that new? But oftentimes we see the pre-retirees or the retirees are in similar situations. You know, you and I both have lost a parent. My mom right now is 89 years old. And so a lot of times what we're seeing is we have our clients, we've been, again, doing this for a long time, that are getting older and older. We're starting to get the families involved, maybe because the parents can't do all the things that they used to be able to do.
Yep.
But then they pass away. And so oftentimes when we're dealing with inheritances, and oftentimes it is either pre-retiree or even retirees that are getting these windfalls. And so a lot of people don't think about the structure that's involved with that stuff. They may not know what the tax implications are, right? They may not know how to blend it with their existing investments. Oftentimes it's giving them an opportunity that they might not have had previously.
Sure.
So it's now How do we structure that? So I just wanted to discuss the kind of the importance of planning along with what you existingly have. Because sometimes they're inheriting, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars or even millions of dollars in their highest income earning years of their lives too, right? And so what's the impact and what type of planning can we do in the future to make all the difference in the world, you know?
Well, and you know, it's interesting. I love the way you're going on this path. I actually had that experience literally yesterday. We had a family friend that passed away, and the family friend had mentioned to my wife, oh, our whole family is getting together tonight to talk about what we're doing and what's happening. And my wife happened to ask, well, who do you work with, just out of curiosity? And they said, oh, no, we don't. It's just us. We don't trust anybody. And my wife actually, you know, kind of said to me, she said, is that normal? And I said, well, yeah, people, you know, they try and, but they might try and figure it out on their own. But as a, you know, in the industry, again, your license is a privilege. You have to treat people the right way. You have to do things that are in people's best interest. You should talk to a professional in that situation or multiple professionals. That's really, again, it's a terrible thing. But I said to my wife, I said, well, this is the only estate they'll probably settle in their lifetimes. Whereas unfortunately in our side of it, you know, we'll probably see 5 to 10 in any given year, right? Where someone passes and you know the questions to ask. So,
no, that's a great point, because that's, you know, we talked, you know, previously about just the taxation and some of our episodes about taxes, is that once you make a mistake, it's irreversible, right? Mm-hmm. And so we see that, unfortunately, where, you know, sometimes they'll make mistakes with the inheritances, and then they'll come to our office after the fact, I should say, and they want us to fix it, right? And it's already too late because they already made bad decisions. So I guess that's the point I wanted to make is that, you know, it may be fine and you may be able to inherit it. There's no tax issues and it's just integrated into your portfolio. But oftentimes we see it a lot because there's opportunities there that the average person just doesn't even know, right? You know?
So again, it's not for lack of knowledge, it's lack of experience.
Yeah.
You just haven't seen it.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. So, or oftentimes their parents might have different types of investments than they have, and so they may not even know what the tax implications are. Or what we find right now, especially, is that the biggest asset is retirement assets,
sure.
You know? And so it's 100% taxable. And so it's now, how do we structure that properly for the next generation? So I think that's a good, you know, way to end this, is just making sure, regardless of where you get your money and how you invest it, is that making sure that you're educating and informing yourself to make the best decisions for yourself and for your family.
Exactly. Great points. So how can they get a hold of us if they have questions, Mike?
Well, they can call our phone number, 1-800-977-9292, and you can ask for John Sauger or Mike Wallace. We have our website, FSA1.com. Thanks for listening to the Retirable Podcast. I'm Mike Wallace.
I'm John Sauger.
Have a great day.
Insurance products are offered through the Insurance Business Financial Services of America. Financial Services of America is also a financial services practice that offers securities products and services through AE Financial Services, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC. FSA is also an investment advisory practice that offers investment advisory products and services through Financial Services of America Advisors, a registered investment advisor. AEFS and FSAA do not offer insurance products. The insurance products offered by FSA are not subject to regulatory requirements and standards of care applicable to registered representatives and are not subject to investment advisory requirements. AEFS, FSAA, and FSA are not affiliated companies. Any and all other services referenced are an outside business activity not offered through or supervised by AE Financial Services Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC, or Financial Services of America Advisors, a registered investment advisor. AEFS and FSAA and any other entities are all separate and not affiliated entities. FSA advisors may refer you to local CPAs for tax services, including our business partnership with FSA Tax and Accounting, and attorneys for estate planning services, including our strategic partnership with Benjamin T. Vader, PLLC, if needed, to coordinate and collaborate with you and your advisor on your holistic financial plan with proper written authorization. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. principle. Any references to protection, safety, or lifetime income generally refer to fixed insurance products, never securities or investments. Insurance guarantees are backed by the financial strength and claims-paying abilities of the issuing carrier. This podcast is intended for informational purposes only. It is not intended to be used as a sole basis for financial decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual's situation. FSAA and AEFS are not permitted to offer, and no statement made during this show shall constitute tax or legal advice. Our firm is not affiliated with or endorsed by the U.S. government or any governmental agency. The information and opinions contained herein provided by third parties have been obtained from sources believed to be reliable, but accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed by FSAA and AEFS. Please remember that converting an employer plan account to a Roth IRA is a taxable event. Increased taxable income from the Roth IRA conversion may have several consequences, including but not limited to a need for additional tax withholding or estimated tax payments, the loss of certain tax deductions and credits, and higher taxes on Social Security benefits and higher Medicare premiums. Be sure to consult with a qualified tax advisor before making any decisions regarding your IRA. Case number 356-0977, May 2024.